Today is December 7th, 2015. Those of you that are my age start to shiver and shake when you say December 7th. It's my earliest recollection of life, the attack on Pearl Harbor. I write about it in Washington. My father screaming to my mother, you know, the radio was a big console in the living room. And my mother was in the kitchen. It was a different world then. Jewish women didn't leave the kitchen. Italian women didn't leave the kitchen. And my father screaming, "Jenny, Jenny, we're at war, we're at war." And little did I realize, you know, a kid of, three, four. Little did I realize how much our universes would change as a result of that morning. So today is an auspicious date, and it should only be L'tova, Aleinu V'alkol, Amo Yisrael. A few words. It ties right in with what with the share I'm going to give in a moment. But Tel Aviv, you're like in a different country. You know, if you're used to Yerushalayim, I imagine going from Haifa to Tel Aviv is not so shocking. But going from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv is absolutely shocking. They opened up a beautiful new area. It's right across the street from the Central Army Command Post. That's where I used to do my army service. And right where this new area is, they knocked down all the old houses, blocks and blocks. You should know, on Albert Mendler Street, which is, they have in the, it's called, if I start going into details, it'll take an hour. But the background is it was a Templar settlement, 1870s. And gradually, when the State of Israel was formed, this was very valuable property in the center of Tel Aviv. And the government took it over. And one last Templar refused to sell. He was an anti-Semite, so they killed him. In those days, you got away with everything. There was no internet, and no YouTube. So they killed him, and they took over his property afterwards. Now, they knocked down all these houses right on Albert Mendler Street. So the little, where you walk in the park, they built beautiful park. Where you walk in the park, they... Zeich L'Dava, they give you what the streets were called originally, and Albert Mendler Street was the center for Russian Jewry. When I would do army, in other words, what I worked out was whenever I wanted to give a lecture in the army, I call my mefaket, and they were overjoyed, I'm coming in. The idea behind it was I had to cover myself because I'm not teaching in Jerusalem. So number one, I have to tell the schools I'm not teaching. Number two, I can't tell anyone where I'm going. Number three, I was in the army. It wasn't a lie. I would get a slip from the army. But the truth was I lectured in the morning. The secretaries in the army were generally from Eidot HaMizrach. Their love for Talmidei Chachamim is indescribable. They would give me a terrific lunch and say, "Oh, the Chayalim were raving about your lecture." Then I would go across the street. The security in the Russian area, which housed the branch of the Mossad that I worked for, was three times as difficult as getting into the army base. Does anyone know why? Very simply, it was one of the five computers that existed in Israel at that time. It took up an entire wall, I remember it vividly, and every name, in order to get out of Russia, you had to request a visa. Any name smuggled out, any visa request, anyone who became a Serovnik was in the computer. What made it more important, I think I've mentioned this over the years, let's say a guy named Rubin in the middle of Russia wanted to get out, Israel got wind that he wants a visa request. Now, only a first degree relative could request. So the Mossad would check the Misrat HaPnim. They'd find that there's a Reuben living in Jerusalem. Unknown to Yitzchak, they would send a visa as if Yitzchak was the guy's brother. It was unbelievable. You have no idea what the State of Israel did. You tell Russians today, they look at you like they can't believe it. You understand? But that's the way life is. It should be that way. And occasionally I would get calls. Let's say the guy in Russia was smart enough to find out who's requesting what's this. He would call call the person in Israel or send them a letter. Who are you? What are you? And they were very suspicious in Russia for fear it's a comet. And I would get a call and I would say, don't worry about it. Just give me the information. I'll pass it on. You have nothing to worry about. It doesn't concern you. It will be taken care of. And many people got out that way with false relatives. Now, speaking about Tel Aviv and Shabbos, now I want to tie it right into the shiur. It was an unbelievable experience. This was a shul in North Tel Aviv. It's Frischman, right off Ben Yehuda. It's the shul where a guy named Pardes was rabbi. I don't want to give him any title because he was a great Talmud Chacham, but he disgraced the Torah. He wound up in jail, and he died afterwards of cancer. I don't want to go into any more details. I'll only suffice it to say a student of mine from the Kollel visited him, Rabbi Klausner, and he told Rabbi Klausner it was a plot of Shulamit Aloni to put him into jail. Now this shul, the whole neighborhood has shifted. Anyone who's from has moved out, either to Yehuda Vishomron, Bnei Brak, depending upon what type of kippah you wear. This was a live, active shul. 10 years ago, Tzoha contacted the shul and said, look, a rabbi is coming aliyah from America, from this very kollel. He was in West Hamptons before, assistant to Rabbi Schneier, also my student, for better or for worse. And they said, we'll send him to your shul. The shul did not have to pay a salary. They only had to pay expenses where he would stay for Shabbos, etc. When he got there, there were 13 balabatim coming Friday night. Now, the Rebbe started something, and we'll talk about it later today in Rebbe's context. The Rebbe started something that influenced everyone. I want to tell you that the Makor Rishon wrote up my student, Rabbi Ariel Constantine, that he gets 300 people Friday night. I have to tell you, it's not true. He got this Friday night minimum 350 people. Now, you got to understand what this means. There are a few old-timers, some of whom drive to the shul, because this was the shul they grew up in. They resent the fact that a mob scene has come in. Many of these people have become from or moving, questioning. On the other hand, I don't know what the percentage is, but at least 100 people, let's say the shul runs a dinner Friday night, and think about what I'm about to say, and these people come to the dinner, hear Kiddush and everything that goes with it. And then after the dinner is over, they go to bars. All the bars are open. Or many of the, it's Tel Aviv. And they go. And now, what have we accomplished? Is it worth the effort? Think about it. And this is what the Rebbe installed. Reach out to every Jew. What's fascinating is two things that the shul innovated. One, when you come Friday night, there's a red carpet in front of the shul to make you feel it's special, the Kabbalat HaShabbat. Friday night, he has Kiddush in shul. It was outside on the lawn, because most of these people are not going to make Kiddush at home. So they make Kiddush on champagne. Champagne and cake and soda. Shabbos morning after davening, the same shtick they use in the Hamptons and in many other synagogues. Tremendous kiddush with chalent, in other words, to attract the people, kugel, chalent. But he gives shayurim, he teaches, he's struggling financially. If anyone's listening who would like to sponsor the rebuilding of the shul, it could use a few million dollars to spruce it up and bring it up to modern standards. But now you should know, in this neighborhood now, within a little walking distance, I'm on Fleischman. Walk to, if you know the area, Ben Yehuda, Fleischman Ben Yehuda, about four blocks up is Shteirat Ben Gurion, right? In this area, you have this shul with Rabbi Constantine outreach. Then you have an old-time shul, Ichud Zion, which is a very well-known shul that's had some well-known rabbis over the decades. They're functioning. Not alive and kicking like it once was, but I'll give you an idea. I davened every day, there are two minyanim every morning, 6 and 7. I davened at the 6 o'clock minyan, so there were 13 people there. Okay, the 7 o'clock minyan, I would imagine, has more. So it's alive. Then a few blocks up is Chabad, on Ben Yehuda, but a messianist. with the flag and the works and all that goes with it. A little bit frightening because I saw a small place. You walk upstairs, it's small. I don't know how big a crowd, but I would imagine if he gets more than 40, I would be amazed. Then a few blocks away on the beach, state-of-the-art building, Eish Tel Aviv. And with a beautiful sign up that this is Eish HaTorah trying to combine Torah with modern Tel Aviv. Again, I don't know what goes on in there, but they're alive and kicking. Now, this is in this little area. A 30-minute walk away is the Tel Aviv branch of Yakar. Yakar began, how many of you don't know what Yakar is? Yakar began in England, that's the Rosens. Oh, I can tell you, it's an unbelievable story. Excuse me? It's the Rosens. Rabbi Kuppel Rosen, each one of his sons became an ishiyut, a personality. Rabbi Kuppel Rosen, from what I gather, was a Scottish gentleman who went to learn in Mir. He came back from Mir and organized the Carmel College in London. They say he was more of an English gentleman than the Queen herself. You understand? He's English, his whole deportment. Now, his son, who came in Aliyah, Zichron Levracha, the son died young, married a student of mine from Michlala, from the West Side, the Gila Radistoffer. He built a tremendous shul, a tremendous activity. It's not, the shul is not state of the art. It's in Katamon. It draws a crowd of hundreds and hundreds, and unbelievable. Now, his brother got involved with a shul in North Tel Aviv, further north, further east, a shul that was totally desolate, and they got a sugar daddy in England to let them refurbish the shul, and the old-time minyanists on one side, the Akam minyanists on the other side, and they are outreach too. So it's my humble feeling that without the Lubavitcher Rebbe starting it, all this would have never happened. But this is a fallout. Okay. Now, let me go further with Chabad. Let me go further with the Rebbe. Let me go further with some insights from Krauss. But there's no question, I ended off last week's shiur with the Hilchat Tshuva, with the Rambam, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalet, and there's no question that Chabad took that Rambam very seriously. That every Jew is interlocked, and ultimately every Jew is interlocked with the world. Tikkun Olam, what everyone raves about today, will come to it. And if you do one more good deed, or get another Jew to do one more good deed, you can weigh the scale in favor of Schut, not Chovah. And the Rebbe viewed the seventh generation that this is our obligation. Call Shvi'i Chabibim, any type of seven, the number seven. By the way, in the shul, one of the Balei Tshuvas into Kabbalah, he spoke about seven. And some of the things we've been saying in Shir, I heard Shabbos, or was it Friday night, in a drasha that this person was given. Yes, Yitzchak.
One of the most popular and important books of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks is called The Letter in the Scroll.
Okay.
Now, he writes a lot about the fact that he was influenced by the Rebbe.
Right.
In fact, he put out a book, which is
right.
The Rebbe on the Parsha of Sharor. In there, he develops this idea, which you're saying now, that if you come to Shul Shabbos and they open up the Torah, and there's a letter missing in a sentence, that Torah is possible.
Right.
In the same way, every Jew is a letter in the scroll.
Right.
If the letter is not there,
He's missing.
He's missing. Right. The people are missing.
Right. And
but to see each of us are letters in the scroll.
Right. But the Rebbe taking that psak halacha in Hilchat Tshuva, that's very powerful. And you'll see, I'll tie it in later. Let me build up. It's very powerful. Now, and the Rebbe, we spoke about this last week as well. We'll pick it up in a minute. That, remember, last week's shiur, to me the high point was I was able to combine the Rebbe with Rav Kook and the Rav. And that concept of Rav Kook, in other words, we have to ask ourselves, who the heck are we? Who the heck are we? Are we any better than our grandparents, our great-grandparents? And why are we, who are we to take this burden? How can we achieve it? And you understand, and every person has to ask himself this question. When Rabbi Zalman Meltzer began giving shayurim in Slabodka, that's before he goes to Slutsk, before he sent the Slutsk, so Rabbi Zalman Meltzer later would talk about how he felt so incapable, he lacked confidence. And yet you see that God put you on the earth for a purpose. And that's what Rav Kook said, that we tied it in with the Vidui on Yom Kippur. And that's what the Rebbe said, the fact that you're here in this seventh generation, you may not equal your forebears, you may not have their same learning, you may not have their holiness, but the fact that you are here, you will be able to achieve. And let me go further. I'm now quoting, and I have to say, the book by Yitzchak Krauss is very, very fascinating, because he's Bucky, he did a doctorate. In order to do a doctorate, you have to know something. He did a doctorate at Bar Ilan. My wife always says the top doctorates in the country have done at Hebrew U. It's not necessarily so. And I told my wife yesterday, we were talking about people with doctorates, I said that, and I think the Technion outdoes Hebrew U in those fields. The Technion is not liberal arts, but to do a doctorate, I remember, you know, if you remind me, I'll bring my doctorate and I'll show it to you. It's so heavy, I can't lift it. But to do a doctorate, you got to really think and back up, and if you have people who know, who are guiding you, in other words, the professors, they're going to challenge you. And I remember when, you know, when your doctorate is finished, the whole faculty, I don't know what they do today, but I remember the day came when I had to face the whole faculty, and they're, you know, they're debating. But I'll tell you one little anecdote. One of the professors looked, the first thing, like, you know, everyone had a copy of my doctorate in front of him, or there were a few copies that they passed around. And he looks at the bibliography, and when he saw that I quoted his writings, I saw his face lit up. So I knew he was on my side. That was Shmuel Kalman. You follow me, Yitzchak? That was Shmuel Kalman. I saw his face lit up for you. So then they send you out of the room, and then when I come back in, they said, Dr. Rothkopf, we'd like you to come back in, you know, and then right away they put a knife in me after they tell me I Baruch Hashem succeeded, and they're accepting it, not done, etc., etc. So then they say, but we don't want you to be like all the other rabbis and not do any more scholarship. This is going to end it for you. You know, it's like a bar mitzvah, like you say to a kid, I hope this bar mitzvah is not the end of your Yiddishkeit. So it's a very nice doctorate, and what's fascinating, he knows the Rebbe's writings. So he's constantly quoting from the various sichats. Everything I'm saying today is from various points in the Rebbe's sichat. If you want the exact source, you can take the Krauss book and you'll see the footnotes. I'm beginning.
What's the topic of his dissertation?
It was published under, I showed you last week, Hashvi'i. But what the topic is, I mean, you can find it. I don't want to start now going through. He probably in the introduction gives you the exact topics. But Hashvi is what it's known by. So Hashvi'i, because everything we're talking about is Shvi'i. So here he says, he called, I'm beginning on page 34. It's the second chapter, and it's a very insightful chapter. And this is Chabad, as you'll see in a minute. He says, the fact that we're in the seventh generation, lo al pi bechirateinu, v'lo al yedei avodoteinu, u'bekam min yonim efshah shelo kefi ritzoneinu. And now, what does it mean, shelo kefi ritzoneinu? Very simple. Balei tshuva, you take Meir Sharim real estate. Meir Sharim real estate has only gone up. You look at Meir Sharim, what are we talking about? It was built 150 years ago, 140 years ago. Show me another place where you buy an apartment which was essentially 140 years old where you're paying through the nose. What makes Meir Sharim so valuable, and believe me, I know some of the people, it is Balei Tshuva who want to go back in time. You see, this is psychologically a very interesting phenomenon. They don't want to deal with the world. You see, Balei Tshuva mentality, you have this all over. It's not as pronounced elsewhere, but I can tell you, I watch the Americans go to certain areas in Beit Shemesh. And here are people with PhDs, MDs, DDSs, endless success, degrees, money, capability, knowledge, and they just want to give the kids a Haredi education, a semi-Haredi education. They want to run away from all that. They want to go back in time. Shabbos, there was part of the family there, so one kid is there with a heavy machine gun. He has an important job in Nachal Haredi. So I befriended him. I got to talk with him. You know, he heard me speak, and Baruch Hashem. And this is a kid who came here, I think, at the age of two. Parents, so successful, open degrees, and they give it. So I got to talk with this kid. Thank God the kid is still from, you understand? He said he couldn't believe what he heard in the Talmud Torah. You know, they don't call it a high school, the Talmud Torah. And the kid doesn't have bakrut, but he's a Nachal Haredi, because I told him, I know, my grandchildren didn't need it, but they knew their friends. Nachal Haredi, the third year, if you don't have bakrut, no army. The army prepares you for bakrut, for the exams. By the end of the third year, you finish Nachal Haredi, you have bakrut. Yes, you might have to do mechinat, one of the universities, but you can step into the big world. But that's, and a lot of kids rebel. This is part of the rebellion, because the parents.
More kids in the Dati Lumi world that are going off.
No, no, not more. No, I don't know if it's more. I don't know if it's more. They're not a lot more. Don't say that, Alex. I live here. I know. I see my grandchildren. I see their friends.
The rates in the Dati Lumi world and in the modern Orthodox world are much higher than the rest.
I don't know. If you can prove that's the. All I know is in Lakewood. They tell me the percentage, I don't want to mention, they say to me it's well over
15%. You think TNEC is much higher?
If TNEC is higher than Lakewood, then
it's
we are in trouble.
Higher.
Say that. My track record is good. That's all I'm prepared to say.
That's
tonight.
That's because you're a really frugal person.
I hope. But my great-grandson already can tell me what's doing in every pasha, you understand? So Baruch Hashem. Anyway, my track record is good. It's good. It's bad in a different way, because I would have liked to have seen Hasidim and everyone is more or less like me. In other words, if we wander off, it's only 10%. Some are more chadali than me, you understand? Some are more datiim lumim than me. I'm somewhere between the chadali datiim lumim world. And my brother too. My brother also. You should see the family he has. Wow, kanaim hara. Okay. Anyway, but I think that we both have a problem.
No, I agree.
The dat lashim and the chadalim. But you see, this wanting to go back in time, if there's a psychologist there, you can understand that. And this is why people, I spoke about this in class already, why people, you know, they rip the hell out of their students. Yeshkatzim, you're a mushroom, you're this, you're that. When we were growing up, we were tzaddikim, we were there. Baloney. But you look back, you have a good feeling, you had a good childhood. Now, this is the opposite of Chabad. And here you have to understand the seventh Rebbe always quoted the first Rebbe. And this word is applied, I've heard it to other Hasidic Rebbeim, but they claim Reb Shneur Zalman was the first one to say it. A chassid daf leben mit der Zeit. A chassid has to live with the times. Now, what does that mean with the times? You can interpret it many different ways. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, you got to live with the world in which you're in. This is the seventh generation. And the methods we're going to use are going to be vastly different than what the third Rebbe used, the Tzemach Tzedek, very famous, or what the Baal Tanya used. in das Leben litzod im Hasman. And this is, you're in the seventh generation, you have to take advantage of the seventh generation. You have to understand it, and you see, well, this concept to live with the Zman explains what I said to you a few minutes before Donnie walked in. I was telling them about my Shabbat in Tel Aviv, the shul. I had very mixed feelings. I don't know. I'm a Litvak. I was raised in a Litvish world. My basic gestalt, as much as I've broadened, I'm still a Litvak. I don't know. Do I want 350 people and they're coming to the dinner and they're in the shul and they're davening, they're singing, and Rabbi, I wish you could see him in action. He'd be an example. Rafi would love him. He has them singing, he's walking up and down, he comes off the bima, and he's alive and alert. Hold on 1 second. Do I want them all in the shul? But you see, Rakefet, Rothkopf, Ani, whatever name you know me by, you lived in a different time. Your Rebbeim came from Europe. You remember what, I write about this in Washington. Reb Henoch Fishman said to me that in Mir, there was many people coming to Daven on Wednesday night as on Leil Yom Kippur. And I was a kid, I couldn't believe him. I mean, I was flabbergasted, I was shocked. I mean, even the shul I was in, the rabbi told me, you don't know the crowd we get on Yom Kippur for Kol Nidre and for Ne'ilah. He says, it's unbelievable how many people come. No. In America, Israel too, even the shul I daven in Rehov Palmacha, during the year you don't see anyone who's not total Shoma Mitzvah in there. But Ne'ilah, Yom Kippur, Kol Nidre, we get some very famous people, people that you read about in the newspaper day in and day out that live in the area. Suddenly they show up in shul with a talit they inherited. See? But if you live with the times, the Lubavitcher Rebbe is right. This is the generation. This is the reality. This is who we're talking to. We have to outreach. Yes, yeah, yes.
How many people does he get Shabbos morning?
So interesting. Remember, there was a bar mitzvah, there was family. Shabbos morning, there were at least 250 people. Mincha, 35. Could be in the summer he gets more from Mincha Maariv. And I saw the old timers sitting there, you know, some were happy, some were, oh, like they were worried stiff there. They're using up a place, air conditioning or heating the shoe. It was an interesting, it brought me back to memories what I've seen in the rabbinate. You know, I was in the rabbinate one decade of my life. I was really in the thick of the rabbinate. I built a shul with these 10 fingers. Today no one even knows I exist there, but that's life. You know, when I told you, when Washington came out, I figured from Maplewood, someone will contact me. All right, most of them are not alive. And the new people there, you know, you don't give a darn about the past. It's like art scroll. The generation after World War II did everything. Who was Rabbi Rebel? Never heard of him. You understand? It's like art scroll. That's life. That's life. You have to be a very big person. An oiska abet the mensch. Can't say that in English. Musa, a big person. Then you know how to acknowledge it didn't begin with you. Lo iti, as Rashi says about Avraham, lo iti hitchila hakadusha. Zeh kelivian vehu, elokei aviv aromamenhu.
Foundation is the most important part of the building.
Right. But you have to be a big person. People and logical things. Bishvilin ivra halam. I did it all. All right. Now, the Rebbe, and this happened gradually. You see, I don't believe as a human being who's achieved the age I have achieved, Kanayin Hara, I don't believe that the Rebbe, when he became Rebbe, he had this whole plan of shluchim and how he was going to outreach. It went in stages. And it began slowly. Your first two shluchim, more or less, are Shlomo LeKalbach and his partner Shlomi Shachta, who totally went off the path. Shlomo LeKalbach had problems, but he remained, his basic configuration was that of a frum Jew. You know, people, women have complained. Again, of all the complaints I heard, I never heard anything as bad as what Lo Aleinu, the rabbi of this shul on Fleischmann Street, off Ben Yehuda, went to jail for, or as the rabbi up north, or the rabbi down south, or the rabbi in the five towns. I never heard anything that bad. Yes, he did touch women. I saw it with my own eyes. And he, if I want to be Malamed Zchut, he may have felt that he's like a psychologist, a psychiatrist, he's above it, it's belitaiva, but Ribbono Shel Olam, you can't do that on your own, chas v'chalila. But these were the first two shluchim, I should say. And then the Rebbe sent more, and there's a whole history of who he sent to Italy. Actually, the chief rabbi of Russia was one of those Americans raised in Italy because his parents were shluchim of the Rebbe to Italy. There was the Gorelick family sent to Italy, the Groner family sent to Australia. And if you know the story with the Groner family, he didn't want to go right away. Yitzchak, he resisted. He is a guy who is a cousin of the Rebbe, who is a chassid of the Rebbe, who was a first-rate, Yitzchak David Groner, Zeichet Tzadik Levrach, a first-rate Talmud Chacham, and he resisted. He went, the sext Rebbe sent him to raise funds day, he brought back some good money after World War II to America, because there were some wealthy Jews down in Australia. And until he gave in to the seventh Rebbe, it was a few years. And it began gradually. But once it began, it became very big. Now, the Rebbe had a vision that he always spoke about. And here, by the way, this is on page 36, and I spoke about this about 20 years ago or so when I did the history of Torah in modern times. And this is the most basic, the word that Morty just used. This is the foundation of Hasidus. You all, I trust, know this, that the Baal Shem Tov, in 1746-1747, Rosh Hashanah, had a vision, and in the vision, he meets Mashiach, he's up in heaven, it's a dream, chazon, and he meets Mashiach, and there's Mashiach learning Torah with all the Tanaim and the Tzadikim. And he asked Mashiach, why are you upstairs? Me'eimatai ka'ati ma. It's based upon a Gemara in Chelek, in Sanhedrin. When will you come? And Mashiach says, kisheyafutsu mayanotecha chutza. Interpret it as you wish. When you spread your teachings, you spread your knowledge, you spread your water. It's based upon the pasuk, a very simple pasuk that we just read in Bereshit, Pashat Vayetze. You want the exact source of the pasuk of Perek Kafchet, Pasuk Yudalet. And it's the Ribbono Shel Olam's bracha to Yaakov Avinu, Vahaya Zaracha Ka'afa Ha'aretz, Ufaratzta, Yoma, v'kedma, v'tzafona, v'negba, v'nivrechu v'cha, kol mishpachot adama u'bezarecha. And this became the basis of outreach. K'sheyafutzu mayanotecha chutza. And the Rebbe quoted this time and time again. There's a Chabad Nigun, I believe it's one of the Nigunim they attributed, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Alex, to the Alter Rebbe. May Eimatai Ka'ati Ma, May Eimatai, May Eimatai Ka'ati Ma, K'sheyafutzu. And the Nigun, they sing it for Brengens, And the Rebbe waves his hand, and the Nigin intensifies many times over. And Reb Menachem Mendel viewed himself as a disciple of the first Rebbe with Me'ematai ka'atima kisheyafutsu mayanatecha chutz. Abram, is that you? Welcome, welcome, welcome. We have a guest from Johannesburg, if I'm not mistaken. London, why did I think South of London? Okay, welcome from London. Where in London?
Hendon.
Hendon, oh, that's where you met when I was there. I was there a few years ago in Hendon. You weren't aware, were you?
I was here last year. I was here for a few months.
So I met you, that's last year. Okay, got it. Anyway, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe time and time again quoted this dream, and if we're in the seventh generation, then we have that special seventh generation obligation to make the world a dira betachtonim for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Rebbe would speak, we have to bring him right down here, right within 10 amot of the ground. There can no longer be a mechitza. The Ribbono Shel Olam has to have his dwelling right here. Now, what's amazing about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and again, it's hard to know if this was planned. Again, I think it came gradually. I think what it means, what we just spoke about, as a Rebbe daf leben mit dizman, that a chassid, a Rebbe, has to live with the times. You see, no one in the world, and Deutsch makes the claim, and he may very well be right, there is no one in the world trying to spread religion that has taken advantage of modern communication and public relations like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now just think for a moment what we're saying. The Rebbe, public relations, who ever heard of Hasidic Rebbeim putting ads in the New York Times? And we're talking about ads, we're going back already to the 60s. Who ever heard the Rebbe paying for advertisement in every Jewish newspaper in the world with his famous letters before the Chagim? Then forget about already the newspapers, talking about the telephone. When talking by the 70s it had to be, could be even before, when the Rebbe had a Fabrengen, there were telephone hookups going all over the world. You should know that the room, the command room in the basement of 770, which had all the electronic equipment which connected the Rebbe to the world, totally manned in the Hebrew language. Everyone in that room was a Baal Tshuva who had served in the army in communications. They wound up in the Golar afterwards, like so many Israeli kids, and Chabad picked them up. The Rebbe had an influence, and they were the ones running the communications. What American kid would know how to deal with all these intricacies? Then when you had satellite communication, I myself in the 70s, I remember a Talmud bought me a ticket to, I told you, to Binyanei Huma, Yutet Kislev, 4 o'clock in the morning, I believe it was 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning when the Fabrengen began in New York. I woke up early, and I was overwhelmed, thousands of people sitting there. And there's a massive screen. And there's the Rebbe, the Fabrengen beginning in New York, and you are there seeing better than anyone could see among the thousands in person. It's unbelievable. Then I told you with the earphones, I noticed I was the only one sitting there without earphones. Everyone had earphones, you had a choice, English, translation, Hebrew translation. I imagine there was a French, today there would be a French translation. It was overwhelming, the technology. All right, ich verstehe Yiddish, I didn't need the translation. But an overwhelming experience. Then you had cable television. Right or wrong, already by cable television, the Fabregans in the 80s into the 90s, you could watch on television. I mean, who ever heard of taking such advantage of public relations? Now again, the Litvak, if I don't have to tell you, Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich, Rabbi Noach Bornstein, with their cynical understanding, in 1 minute flat, would have left the Rebbe off. Wow, mishagas, was he doing? Ach, was it? And was it? Entertainment? Was heißt das? Man guckt on television. Ach, Schatz and Ramashim, they would go crazy. And the Rebbe used all the modern means of communication. You take today, and of course, Chabad is alive and kicking. You take today the websites. Now, I'm not a great expert, but they tell me that Chabad has the most sophisticated. They say J.E.M. was the first of all these websites, and the most sophisticated in what they're doing and what they're interviewing. And you all know they came here, what was it, last year, 2 years ago? I don't remember. I have no idea what happened. They closed down all of Gruss, all the offices. They turned it into a studio. They needed, but they brought in equipment. You remember, Yomo, the equipment they brought in? I couldn't believe my eyes. Like a professional team from Hollywood arrived to make a movie of Aaron Rekefit describing the Rav and the Rebbe and my encounters with the Lubavitch and the Rav, etc., etc. They told me it's going to be edited. JEM will release it. Write them, email them, and find out what's happened. You know, I can't keep track of it, but they interviewed me for 2 hours. It was not a small matter. The people couldn't get into the offices until after 10 o'clock that day. And everyone, I was apologizing, and everyone was so proud. It's like, you know, who knows, we're on the map. But you see, this is Chabad. Now, will you ask me, would the Rebbe plan all this when he took over in 41? I don't think so. I think life, no one has written on this. When he took over in, he came to America in 41, but when he took over in 51, did the Rebbe think all this out? Did he plan?
He
had the capability and he had the training, but when he became Rebbe and cried that night, as you can hear on the recording, did he ever dream Shaluchim? Then he said to Shlomo, the book by Dalfin on Shlomo Le Kalmbach, it's, the English is not on, you know, someone complained to me, the English is not a good, high enough level. Agreed, he didn't go to postgraduate school, that's for sure. But I couldn't get over his insight and descriptions of Shlomo and the Rebbe. And, you know, the Rebbe said to him, you know what, go on college campus. You two fellas have that ability. You two fellas can play music. You two fellas can entertain. You two fellas, let's olden hazman, as we just spoke about. Go, try. And the Rebbe saw the good, the bad. You know, it was heartache for the Rebbe. Remember what we said, where Kalmbach said he had one idiot because the Rebbe told him to have a mechitza and have the men and women separately. But the Rebbe saw the good, he saw the bad. But you see what he developed out of it. The same thing as the shluchim start to work, and as I imagine there's pressure on the Rebbe, we want contact, and we feel bad we're in Italy, we feel bad we're in Australia, we want contact. Wow, what you can do with the press, with the print, with radio, with TV, with closed circuit television, with satellite. Today, the internet, well, Chabad is right on top of the world on that relationship. And he says no other religion in the world operates on this level. We're not talking about the Jewish level. We're talking about all religions. And no other religion in the world operates on this level. Then he makes another point, which is very fascinating to me. When we come back again, time and again, he's quoting the Rebbe here, how the Rebbe quotes the Alter Rebbe, the Baal Tanya, that a Jew has to walk with the times. So he says that the first Rebbe had certain requirements from the Jews, and his requirements were very simple, that a Jew should walk and not be ashamed to be a good Hasidic Jew and to be proud. That was his requirement. The middle Rebbe used to tell his students that when you walk in the street, you should think about bringing about a yichud between the upper world and the lower world. And the sixth Rebbe already spoke about that a Talmud in yeshiva, Tomchei Tamimim, when you walk out of the yeshiva, you have to be an askan. You have to be active, and you have to reach out to others. And you see, the seventh Rebbe said, each one made a requirement in accordance with his times. And why does this speak to me? Because if you've studied about the yeshivas and litta, so there used to be an expression that if you walked in the forests around Kells, you would smell the ktsaisa chayshin, you would smell the avne miluim, you would smell all the great achronim that they studied so hard in Kells, because when the fellas walked there, that's all they were talking about. If why you in my time, when the Rav finished shir, all we were talking about was the Rambam and the Raiva. You understand? So here, the Rebbe, very interesting description how each generation required something else in accordance with the times. But the sixth Rebbe already is telling them to be askanim. Askanim, osek, isuk, activist, reaching out, doing. It's another tremendous achievement, gradual, different than anyone else. You never yet heard the Belzer Rebbe or the Gerer Rebbe tell their Hasidim to be askanim. They're telling their Hasidim to be good Hasidim. But here in Lubavitch, it's a different gestalt altogether. Every Lubavitcher Chassid has to be a shtickle Rebbe, has to be involved in outreach, has to be an askan. In the Litvisha world, the word askan means a politician, a balabayit. What does it have to do with the rabbinate? I remember hearing some Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva here when I first came in Aliyah and didn't know where I belonged. So I remember they were talking about the head of Mizrahi, Reb Chaim Moshe Shapiro. So his brother, who died a few years ago, was a big Rosh Yeshiva, Litvisha Talmud Chacham, but they said about Reb Chaim Moshe Shapiro, considering the fact that he never studied in a real yeshiva, and his life was interrupted by World War II and coming in Aliyah, he didn't turn out that badly as an askan. You follow me? That was the attitude. The Rebbe, when he says an askan, oh boy, what a goal, what a mission, what positive thinking. It's all part of that seventh generation.
What's the literal translation of that term?
Askan?
Yeah.
You know something? A little translation. I don't know. The Rebbe is using it in the sense
an
activist who reaches out.
Okay.
That's the Rebbe, Ashken.
And the term in modern Hebrew means similar to what we would call an activist in...
No, in modern Hebrew, in modern Hebrew they use it basically, politicians... Or if you do, I'll tell you, they'll call you an askan if you run it stucker. Let's say you run it stucker, you have free loans, no interest, a gemach.
Wow.
So you would use the word, he's an askan. An active...
Well, it also means an operator. somebody who's involved.
An activist is part of it. But the word Askan, as the Rebbe is using it, it's someone who doesn't just remain a good chassid with a fur jacket on and not taking off the jacket and getting to work. An Askan, that's the Rebbe. And then we come back to what I said an hour ago, or almost an hour ago, and Bram, I was talking about, I just spent the Shabbat in Tel Aviv, and you see here too there was something very unique about Lubavitch. The Rebbe reached out to all Jews, everybody. The Rebbe viewed every Jew as part of a collective body, like the Rambam we spoke about last time. You're not just an individual. You're Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. You're Klal Yisrael. You're Adat Yisrael. You're a collective body. And if that's the case, a real Askan, a real Lubavitcher, has to reach out to all Jews. Underline the word, all Jews. Now, this is very fascinating, because that answers the question I raised. Is it worth what Rabbi Constantine is doing, 350 people Friday night? You can't believe the crowd. There wasn't an empty seat standing in the back, people only. It reminded me of Yom Kippur, an American shul where people come in once a year, they don't know how to hold a sitter, and then they'll stand around and like it's the chavaya, the experience. It was unbelievable. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Litvak, once again, I'll go back to Reb Yeruchim, to Reb Noach, and these were great Lamdanim. Don't misunderstand me. Reb Noach Bonstein was the greatest Talmud of the Briska Rav, of Reb Avraham. Rav Kefet said it many times, and then it turned out that what Kefet is saying is right there in the biography of the Briska Rav from the Haredi world. Follow? Word by word, either someone's listening to me or Shnei Neviim Mitnabdim B'Signon Echad. But he quotes the Briska Rav. This Rav is giving hell to American rabbis. What kind of land do you have in America? My greatest Talmud went there and he vanished. Was ist geworden mit dem? Es war verschwunden geworden. Reb Noach Bornstein. And they mentioned the name. Of course. What do you think? Of course. Of course. The son of Shmuel just retired. No. Mark, did you have Shmuel Bornstein as a teacher? Taught him while you didn't hear the name? You heard the name. I think he taught Jewish history, might have taught math, I don't know exactly. Nice fellow. Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich also taught NYU, despite the fact that only the Art Scroll generation, his son, who has children in some Torah journal from Muncie, right, that he never, God forbid, he never taught NYU. He just went in occasionally to give the guys hell and Musa to get out of there and go to a real yeshiva. Could you imagine to tell a lie like that when there are tens of thousands of students alive who studied with him in YU? I mean, it's beyond words, but that's a certain mentality. It's a frightening mentality. It's an anti-Torah mentality. It's a Fadobenkeit mentality. There's ethics and morals missing. It's very frightening that Bnei Torah, so-called, can think this way, talk this way, and publish it, and not be afraid that there are tens of thousands of people in the world that are going to say, you're lying through your teeth. It's frightening. Now, the Rebbe spoke about this very, very interestingly, that originally among Hasidim, there's an expression. This expression hit me between the eyes yesterday at the David Ben-Gurion Museum where he lived, on Rehov Ben-Gurion, right near the sea. It's worth going just to see Ben-Gurion's house, his books, his collection, who he was. And he deserves a lot of zchut because he established the state. He had the guts to cross the State Department. You got to give credit. That he was far from Yiddishkeit of his parents and grandparents is also true. But that was that generation. I believe he has descendants who put on tefillin, and some are here, some have left the country. I know his daughter, his one surviving daughter, was interviewed. and a few years ago in Yediot, and a whole article about her, and she said that ultimately the only Jews left in this country will be the religious Jews. They're the ones that care, and you can see already she's talking about her own generations. So Ben-Gurion, they say what it meant to be in the party. And if you got a tzetel, if you got a tzetel, how do you say that in English, a piece of paper signed by the big shots in the Mapai, all it had to say was, Yitzchak Rubin, hu me enash, enash, tazala b'kol ma'she yachol. That opened every door to him. If he was a chayrutnik, they persecuted him. Ha, enash, an she shlomeinu. And who used that phrase all the time? Pinchas Sapir, Shazar, these were the big Mapainiks. They grew up in religious areas. Enash, that's a Hasidic expression. Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. You see, when two Hasidim meet, imagine you're in a train station in Copenhagen. You're waiting for a train. And there comes a Jew, mitabod, mitpreyes, and you start talking and talking about the Rebbe. Before you know it, you break out a little vodka, memachta lachayim. That's called enash, anshei shlomeinu. So the previous, the Rebbe spoke about that originally in Chassidut, everyone reached out to enash. That continues in Belz and Ger and Vishnitz, you name it today. That, anshei shlomeinu, es von unserer, an eigene, that's in Yiddish, it means the same thing. You follow me, Dani? The sixth Rebbe, watch, the Riatz spoke about reaching out to Geza Enash, descendants of Enash. Now, what does that mean? Who helped me out? Do you recognize what I just said? It's a trivia. The Beit Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Shmelkes, watch. Gezer Enash. By the time of the sixth Rebbe, the majority of people who grew up in Chabad and left Lubavitch and left wherever, Riga, and went all over the world, the majority were no longer religious. But they had a feeling yet. We have to reach them. That's the story when the Rebbe arrived. I told you, my wife's cousin was there at the pier. I later, exactly what he told me. The Eliezer sons, the Zichron Livracha. Exactly what he told me appears in books today. Chabad, the few Chabadnikim in America, published ads in the 4 or 5 Jewish dailies in New York City, which I still remember most of them. And the ad read, to anyone who holds Lubavitch near and dear, we wish to inform you that at this day, at this place, at Battery Park, at this embankment number, the Lubavitch Rebbe is arriving in America. Thank God he has been saved from the communists and from Hitler. About 5,000 people went down. Where the heck did you get 5,000 people? There weren't 5,000 Shomer Shabbos in all of Brooklyn. A lot of people, their youth, Chabad, Lubavitch, a Rebbe, Chassidus. My cousin told me when they started, the Rebbe was in a wheelchair. Walking behind him was Rebbe Shmaya Guraya, wheeling the wheelchair, and his wife, his daughter, Barry, his once grandson. So someone started up an old Chabad digging. And suddenly, 5,000 people were singing. Many were in tears. And men went home and told their wives, I told you this, you have to understand what the world was like then. And they told their wives, the Rebbe's there, the Rebbe's now in America, we can't be Mechalel Shabbos. Can't eat treif. Some of the women wouldn't go along. Why? because they had an appointment at the beauty parlor, 10 o'clock Shabbos morning since 1929. You got to remember, Saturday night, there was no television then, no internet. You went to the movies. They were built like palaces. Today, some of them, the first Thotmer Big Schnibbel in Borough, in Williamsburg was a movie theater. Mm-hmm. Other movie theaters all over, built like palaces. All Jews. The whole industry was in the hands of Jews. And to go to the movies, then you went out to Lorps, you had an ice cream soda, you know, it was a social event. You gotta have your hair in the, you know, I don't want to embarrass Ora, but a woman, it's an open Gemara. You know what the Gemara says? That even a woman over 80, I don't use the exact words of the Gemara, she's still concerned with her looks. Baruch Hashem, that women are concerned. I always say, Shekha Chain Vehevel Yofi, Yisha Yirat Hashem Tetalal. Yeah, if a woman has Chain and Yofi, then she can afford to say, look at my Yirat Shemayim. But if you don't have the Chain Vehevel, you can't nullify it yet, so you don't get further. It's my vote. So the woman has to go to the beauty parlor. She's not going to give it up. You know when the women became Shomer Shabbos? I'll tell you when. Study the personality of a woman. Listen to the Rav Shayurim in Family Redeemed. Okay? I'll tell you when. When the kid was going to Yeshiva Ketana, what you call a day school today, and the kid came home and told his mother, Mommy, I'm embarrassed that you go to the beauty parlor Shabbos. A wife may not do everything for a husband, but she certainly will do everything for a child. You follow me? That's when the women, it's an interesting phenomenon. Some became right away. Some it took a few years. But Geza Enosh, Enosh. No. What did the Rebbe say when he said the Beit Yitzchak? No, Yitzchak, you know what I'm referring to? It's the same concept in Geirut. In Geirut, the Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Mem Vav Mem Zayin. So if you know the Indian of Geirut, I gave Sherman the Kodal years ago. I must have spent a year and a half on it. Geirut, a very fascinating topic, which is a big problem today, was never a problem halachically. It's very little ever written on Geirut, because originally, who converted? If you converted, you were sacrificing your life, basically. So you were sincere. And what's the shaila? Of course we welcome converts.
But are those Shirim on Ryan's door?
I don't know. I don't know how far back it goes.
Do you remember 8 years ago?
No, it's... Everything shifts. Maybe someday they'll be written up. In the book coming out, my best Shirim on Adguna, they're very good. Asaf Bednash's son read them. He was overwhelmed. I mean, the person writing it up, my Talmud.
Somebody's transcribing them?
Yeah, Yaakov Weinstein. And then I edit, and it's finished already. We signed off on that. No, it's all in Evan Ezra, all the difficult areas. We'll go back. I think he started on Yantav Sheni now, he told me. But anyway, so those Shirim, he really did a beautiful, beautiful job. It really clarifies all of Siman Yud Zayin. But anyway, coming back here. So with Geirut, if someone tells you they want to convert, the first thing you have to do is tell them, what are you, crazy? What are you, an idiot? You got to quote Rabbi Kalbach. You can quote the Gemara, Mem Vav, Mem Bet, Mem Zayin, Mem Aleph. The Jews persecuted after Hitler. And you have to discourage them. Of course, if they really want to convert, then ultimately you have to take them, belave and nefesh, with all your heart and soul, and introduce them to Torah. And you never can remind them again that they were Geirim. It's like telling a Baal Tshuva, who were you? It's absolutely forbidden. But what about if someone has Jewish blood in him? Father is Jewish. Mother is not. There's a very famous rabbi living a few blocks from here whose father married, this is Holland, father married the non-Jewish woman who saved his life during the Holocaust. So this kid is born of a Jewish father and a non-Jewish woman who saved the lives of Jews. No, he says he wants to convert. You can't discourage him. There's a Jew of the Beit Yitzchak, and with its Gezi Yisrael, you have to reach out to them. This is the whole question with the Russians coming in. 90% of those who aren't halachically Jewish are Migeze Beit Yisrael. Well, this is part of the whole debate going on here. I don't want to go into it now, of course. We're in a different... We're concerned with the Rebbe. But why do I cite this? This is exactly what the sixth Rebbe said. We have to reach out to Geza Enash. You follow what I'm saying? You follow the analogy? You with me, Alex? It's fascinating. Geza Enash. Geza Enash. The first Rebbe, the second Rebbe, he wanted them to walk in the street and talk Hasidus. It's like in tells like Mir, they say when they went, whatever they were doing, they barely ate. They rushed everything, learning. The sixth Rebbe already understood the times in which he lives. We have to reach out to Gezer and Nash. The seventh Rebbe, we have to reach out to every last Jew, even if he doesn't know he's Jewish. He's completely estranged. It's a different vision altogether. More than that, as we will see. The seventh Rebbe, knew? Did you read the headlines in newspapers the last few days? Have you seen the websites? Chabad is reaching out to the Palestinians. Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Yeah, they know what they're doing. If they will accept it, they may not kill. There are some, you got to remember, you can't generalize. There's some Palestinians, unbelievable. There's one of the big loudmouths in the Knesset, that woman, her cousin, is an Ohev Yisrael. You should hear him speak. I imagine he went underground because he needs protection. There's from Hebron, the worst family there. There's a grandson who has a long beard and a big kippah sruga. Many, many children in Kiryat Arba, Ein Hara, his own children, a big family. B'kedusha b'tahara. So the Rebbe ultimately goes way beyond only the Jews. Every human being. Ba'asher husham. What a development here.
Do we have any record of the Rebbe meeting with right-wing evangelical Christians?
I'm sure he did, but I'm going to go to something that will answer your question, Bigadol. Relax. Now, this concept of reaching out to every Jew, how do we see that black and white? No? How many of you have seen the letters that I referred to that the Rebbe published before every Chag? How did those letters begin? The Igrot. L'chol b'nei u'b'not Yisrael b'chol makom shechem. See it? No? Can you picture the Belzer Rebbe sending out a letter? L'chvod enash. Yishmerehim tzuram v'goalam. The Gerer Rebbe, the Vishnitz Rebbe. No one talks like this. The Satmuruv, today they're two Vishnitzes. Today actually they're two Belzers. Peace was finally made a week ago between the Belzer Rebbe and his cousin B'nai Brak, who was not allowed to, he was the Munkatav Rebbe, has a long name, I don't know how to pronounce it. And a big Rebbe, Sayyid Sadek. And if he ever would use the word dash bells, some bells chassidim would beat the hell out of him. What went on for 26 years of machloket, you have no idea. And they made peace just a week ago. So, but they're writing letters? To whom? The Lubavitchers, a totally different concept of responsibility. L'chol b'nei u'b'not Yisrael, b'chol makom sheheim. Now, that b'chol makom sheheim, you can interpret two different ways. B'chol makom sheheim means Australia, South Africa, London, Hendon, geographically, or b'chol makom sheheim, wherever you are, theologically, philosophically, spiritually, b'chol makom sheheim. And it's amazing. These letters live on in tool today. They're published, they're republished. All right, you got to see who's publishing them. If it says Nishmato Eden, Zkuto Yagen Aleinu, that's normative Lubavitch. If it says Melech HaMashiach, Yechi Adoneinu Moreinu Raveinu, that already is the messianic sign. My heart breaks when I see them, because I've spoken to some of them. They're like, they're programmed. It's very sad. And, you know, I saw in Tel Aviv, we saw one guy marching around Shabbos, going to that Chabad place I spoke about, carrying the Messianic flag. You follow? Like, he's carrying the flag on a pole, like he's in a parade. And, you know, I looked at him, what can I tell you? And it hurts. It hurts because they do an injustice to the Rebbe's memory, but they don't realize it. They do an injustice. But all right, that's life. You can't win, and you can't, you learn in life. I've seen people make wills. I'll give you an example. I had a classmate, and I'll mention the name because it's L'Kavod L'Tiferet. Had two classmates, Joel and Simi Schreiber, from the Schreiber family. You should recognize the name from the Mikveh Foundation. Their father and uncles, a number of Schreiber brothers, they devoted their lives to building mikvot all over the world. Terrific people. And the Schreibers. So they had a business. They were very successful. At one time, they manufactured undergarments for men and women. And then later, importing. Of course, today it's harder, you know, when you manufacture and you have a say in what's being made and can control your product, you do much better. Your product, you do much better. But today, they imported. So anyway, I think the business finally closed down. Now, the original founders of the business put in a tanai that if they're in as children, grandchildren, those that will inherit the business henceforth and ever, you know, a lawyer worked it out with legal language, and the business becomes Mechalel Shabbos, the whole business must be sold and the money distributed to Orthodox Stuttgart. Something like this is in there. So Baruch Hashem, they never had, you know, the children are fabulous, the grandchildren, you know some of them, one of them is a Rebbe in Alon Shvut and Haretzion. I taught many of the descendants. So I once asked the lawyer, you know, that's a fabulous idea, but can it be enforced? And so this was a prominent lawyer. He said to me, not a chance in a million. The minute it would go into court, you get involved with separation of church and state. Then you would get involved, what is Chilul Shabbos? You understand, what's the Oraita, what's the Rabbanan, and what kind of definition of Chilul Shabbos? He says, he doubts very much if you can control. And I heard from lawyers many times that sometimes people come up, you know, their money is so important to them that they want to control their money after they're dead, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years later, and they come up with all types of wills with many clauses. 90% of the times, das Geld wird taken bankers. Try to translate that into English. But that's when they take blood and they take the skin out, whatever, and it's worthless. It's worthless. So people try to control beyond their life. And it hurts. You can't control, but it hurts when people go astray. And, you know, with the Rebbe, the messianicism, it's a discredit to his memory. With the Rav also, he didn't escape clean. I have to tell you, you don't know what went on when Chovev Torah was just beginning, which was a da. They once held a conference in Israel, had a big ad, maybe a full page ad and a half page ad in the Jerusalem Post, and they had the Rav's picture as the background to the ad. And you should know that Dr. Tova Lichtenstein was hysterical. She called and she was furious. She wiped the floor with those who did it. You understand, you want to be a reformer, but to turn the Rav into a Dach, which today evolved into Chovevei Torah, fellowship, rabbinic fellowship, whatever they call it, that's not.
Now the Rav's too frum for that.
That's not the Rav. Well, now Baruch Hashem, because people, believe me, people spoke out, so it becomes a little harder. You understand? I'm viewed as a fanatic already. Can I inherit? Can I inherit?
Okay. Use the Rav as a supporter of peace.
Yes, so even that I will tell. That's not exactly fair because times have changed. We tried Land for Peace. We had Oslo. We see what their textbooks are. We see how they're raising their children. Anyone who has a mind that works properly, that would exclude Obama. You don't know what's going on in America, what people are saying about him.
It's not nice, but it's supposed to be Achimod Kadosha, but I remember Yossi Sarit on television.
Right.
When he was Sarah Hiduch, lying right through his teeth.
Right.
That the Palestinians have changed their textbooks.
Right, have changed it. So
he knew they didn't.
Anyone with his right mind understands they want us out of here. The minute you give them this, they want more. You give more, they want more. More, more. The hatred, 14, 13-year-old kids, 16-year-old girls, knives, it's beyond comprehension. But look what you have with the Scandinavian countries. Look what that foreign minister. But Netanyahu was excellent. I said, why? I want to take credit. I said, why doesn't he say? We're no different than America, no different than London, no different than France. If a terrorist comes to kill you and killed, you got to kill him. If not, he's going to kill more. I don't know. He said it. You heard? Netanyahu challenged her, the foreign minister. Okay, but let's come back here. And this concept outreach to everyone. That was the seventh Rebbe. Every Jew, Ba'asha Husham, and afterwards it evolves even further. And quoting the Rebbe, and this is an expression they use, which has a controversial aspect to it. But quoting the Rebbe, every Jew has to conquer the part of the world in which he lives, Eretz Tachtonim, and turn it into Eretz Yisrael. And Kilashon Hayadua, as the Rebbe would always say, as Kafi Hamadubar, as we have said so many times, to make a dira betachtonim. And this is the goal of every individual, to not just be a good Jew, a good chassid himself, but to elevate the entire surroundings in which he is found. Now, that summarizes everything we've said today. The one problem I'm alluding to, and this is not just in Hasidus, you find it all over. People speak that you've turned your surroundings into a spiritual utopia. And they call it Eretz Yisrael. Now, if they mean Eretz Yisrael in a spiritual sense, I have no problem. But you see, this concept, Lo Aleinu, at our good Yisrael conventions, learned Jews have gotten up and said, Eretz Yisrael is not a geopolitical concept, but a spiritual concept. We can have Golus in Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael in Borough Park.
Well,
Alex, relax yourself. I'm going to give you a black and white example, but I'm sure the Rebbe didn't mean it that way. I just called your attention.
But that's a famous word from the Tzemach Tzedek. The Chassid wanted to make Aliyah, and the Tzemach Tzedek said to him, and we know there's a Tzemach Tzedek shul in the old city. And
I should hope so.
Yes, there was a Hasidim that came here, but he said to that Chassid, make here Eretz Yisrael, Machdu Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, not a Beseda, but...
And that statement from the Gur Yisrael is 100% true. You could be living in a level that's closer to the spiritual...
No.
That doesn't mean that you're not able to access that more.
I will go one step further and just show Alex...
It doesn't mean that literally they don't believe in the Mikdash and...
Alex, I'll tell you who to contact. And I'll go one step further. And this is the danger that I'm alluding to. That I agree with Alex's interpretation. If you mean it that way, I have no problem with it. But you have to be aware that you're not in Eretz Yisrael, you're in Borough Park. But hold on, I'll tell you a little story. So I had a student, this is a family I've been very, very close to since the day I came in Aliyah. I met the grandparents of the person I'm going to tell you about, and I had a big role in bringing the family in Aliyah. Many years later, they heard me speak in Staten Island, and I ended off my talk. You have a choice of being a social security number, one of millions, hundreds of millions, or changing, help to forge and change and alter and influence the destiny of the Jewish people, where it's all happening, Alat Mata Kodesh. And the family listening, Avery Gross, Avraham Gross, was so overwhelmed by that last sentence that he told me he couldn't make Havdalah. It took him hours to regain his composure, and subsequently the family came in Aliyah. Now, one of the daughters... two of the daughters studied me in Mechala when they were still living in Chutz Laretz, in the foreign students program. So the girl showed me a paper she did in Prospect Park in Brooklyn, and she wrote about Eretz Yisrael and praising and why Jews have to make Aliyah, and the teacher wrote on the paper, you are all wrong, Eretz Yisrael is not a geographic political concept. It is a state of mind of spirituality. And she saved that paper. Her parents were furious, but that's what I'm upset with.
There are tons of Alex,
I'm on your side. But I'm telling you, the one when you read Kol Yitzri Moshe Kako, La Soto, Eretz Yisrael, we just have to make clear that it's not really Eretz Yisrael. It's spiritually, we want it to be holy. We're using Eretz Yisrael as a synonym for holiness.
Right, but we're also trying to make the point that you could live here in Eretz Yisrael and not be tapped into the spiritual idea, and then you're missing the point.
The Satmaruv makes that point in Vayakel Moshe in about the 300 pages. That's
his whole thing. I've seen people, modern Orthodox Jews, who are all excited. I'm not in Golis anymore. I'm going to Eretz Yisrael. And they're living this life that's a lower level of Frumkeit than some of them were living when they were in America.
Yeah. So I tell you why that happens. I also was shocked. When I came in Aliyah, I met Jews who had given up Yiddishkeit, came in 48, 49, they're no longer alive. Wonderful Jews. They came back belay v'nefesh, don't misunderstand me. But I asked them, why are you graduates? You come from such chashuva families. The mother, the wife was the daughter of a big Talmud Chacham that my mother-in-law yet taught for him in his yeshiva. And they said to me that they were so, when they came in Aliyah, it was like a new world. Everything here is Jewish, everything is in Hebrew. It's the way Rakefet puts it, you curse in Hebrew, you pay taxes in Hebrew, you read the newspaper in Hebrew, the news is in Hebrew, everything surrounds you. What do you need religion for? In America, if you don't have a shul, if you don't daven, you have no connection to being a Jew. So you must... If you care about being a Jew, you must show identity. Here, your very existence is identity.
So, Alex,
you know what it means? We need people reaching out and teaching and telling the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, now that you've gotten here, you have to be frumer, you have to be better, you have to be more tzaddik, you have to be more chassid, etc.
A viewer in religious Zionist ideology, that you recognize that modern Hebrew is not Lashon HaKodesh, and that you don't get caught up in all the distortions of that. You recognize the real Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and you realize that you have to bring the state of mind, Machdu Eretz Yisrael, here also, but, in actual physical Eretz Yisrael.
But Alex.
And they don't say that.
Alex, the Chadalim certainly say it.
They say it.
And Aaron Rakefet has said it all along. But I want to tell you, modern Hebrew, you're raising a different question, a halachic question. When I came in Aliyah, I attempted to keep Baruch Ator. And I told you, within a year of being here, I saw my children laughing at me. So, you're
going to change your minhag because of
conformism? Because I'm a chassid of the Rebbe and a yid afgein mit the tzeit. I have a right to do as I wish. So I met Rav Gorin at the Kotel that Friday night.
Rav Kook spoke Ashkenazi Hebrew.
I know.
Rav Kook.
Rav Lichtenstein davened yet in Ashkenazis, but his children, outside of one are all all part of Matan Yisrael. So I asked Rav Gorin about changing, do I have to be Mataneda? He said, he spoke with me 20 minutes, and he knew me because I'd been at a shiur when he spoke in yeshiva in 57, and the Rav Sher reminded him what I said, and the question, I'd say that. He, I don't know if he remembered or not, but he was all happy that I remembered, the incident, the meeting. So he convinced me that Rashi spoke Sfardit. But, you follow? But anyway, I did change. And it was a very smart move, because this is the language we speak here. It's part of your right. It's part of the holy rebellion. But that part has caught on. And believe me, it doesn't harm. It only adds good. But I will never force anyone.
There's no reason why you can't daven according to the...
After living here 47 years... I can no longer speak. I Baruch Ator. I have to think Baruch Ator. Baruch Hashem. I am an Israeli carrying the Torah into the year 2017. This got to be 1 year ahead of yourself. We're soon January 1st.
If I may, about the Rebbe.
Yeah.
There's an old expression based on a gospel song of Paul Robeson. We are all climbing Jacob's ladder. That means that the Rebbe is saying, "B'chomer komshen," each Jew is on a different level on the ladder, reaching the Shemayim to God. Therefore, we have to reach out not only to those who are with us, but also those who are below us.
Right. All right. Baruch Hashem, we're all saying the same thing. But all right. I don't know. I hope the religious Zionists are on a higher level than Alex is describing. But as you know, in the religious Zionist camp now, the world is shaking with Bennett, with Magal. You understand, are we a Likud too, or are we the old Mizrahi? And these are serious questions. I have opinions on it and a lot to say, but it's not for now. Okay, so anyway, all right, the class ended off with interesting discussion. I apologize, I get complaints from overseas. They want to hear me, they don't want to hear anyone else. But part of teaching, this is the classroom comes first, part of teaching is allowing students to express themselves. Yitzchak, I need a lift. My car didn't stop this morning. Are you here with your car? Okay, so don't run away. Give me 2 minutes to deal with Sherry and we'll take off. To reiterate, we're continuing on the theme of the seventh generation and the outreach and what was unique about the Rebbe. And I believe, and I may be right, I may be wrong, it's a gradual development. I don't know that the Rebbe had a plan in 1951. This is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to achieve, and shluchim, and mitzvah tanks, and letters, l'chol b'neyu b'notr Yisrael b'chol makom ha'shehein, public relations, but there's no question that the Rebbe was so unique in all these areas. The concept of reaching out, that Chassidim should be made more Chassidish, then the Gezer Enosh, then to every Jew, and then even to Goyim, is no one else like Chabad. And there's no question that the Rebbe played a crucial role, and the concept as Mitafgein Mitzayt becomes very, very important here.
Does this mean that we nullify the old halacha that you're not allowed to go in Mishka? Meaning not for conversion purposes, but for people
who I understand.
Really true
Look at you. Certainly, looking first of all to the Sri Deyesh has a long tshuvandis, which I dealt with in the Sunday class when I dealt with the Holocaust. But the answer is very simple. The Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, they're obligated to. So you certainly can teach them about that. So you have to teach them. Of course, that's exactly it. And everyone agrees, even Nechves, the most anti-teaching women Torah stance, but everyone agrees it's an open Ramah. You have to teach them the halacha they have to observe. You follow? Even in Satmar, even in Ger. But we'll see in the Sunday class, the next class, very fascinating from Reuven Asher Klein. There's one paragraph there where he sounds exactly like the way I understand Rabbi Willig. And it's fascinating. But no question you're allowed to teach them. Now, next week, Be'ezrat, next time we meet, next Sunday, Monday, there are no classes. It's Hanukkah, then we pick up normal again. Next time we meet, I will deal with the outreach to Goyim. Not what happened. We'll reach it again later. But I want to give you a little bit insight why the Rebbe would not wave away the Gentiles. Why he was concerned with Gentiles too, because there too he was very unique. I don't think the Safmudov is concerned with Gentiles. I don't think the Vishnu Sereb. I don't think Rabbi Aaron Kotler was concerned with. I don't think Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was. And yet the Rebbe was. And I find that unique. All right. Before we say a happy Hanukkah, anyone who wants to have another copy of the sources on Thanksgiving Day, halachic and non-halachic, why we celebrate Thanksgiving Day. This is the article by Rabbi Eliyahu Safran that has caused a tremendous storm, Why We Can't Ordain Women. Now, I know Rabbi Safran personally. I taught his daughter. He's a very, very solid individual. One of the mainstays Cross Currents, I think. One of the mainstays of the OU. I have to correct myself. I don't know which class, or maybe it was the Sunday class. I spoke about Reb Nosson Kamenetsky's books. So my Talmud Chaim Meiselman tells me that the improved edition is still available. Reb Nosson is selling them on eBay, and I heard it's because he needs the money. This is very interesting from Chaim Meiselman. By the way, he has a mistake here. He thinks that the book I spoke about that can only be made available 25 years after his death is not Making of a Gadol. It's the Autonomy of a Ben. And that's a book that he doesn't want published now because it'll create a tremendous storm in the Haredi world. I have a copy of it, and I'm not allowed to show it to anybody. He did distribute a number of copies to keep people who he feels can spread the word that the book exists. So in 25 years, long after from now, because he should be alive for many more years, Reb Nosson, then that book will be made available. If anyone wants this, it's yours. This is my Talmud, as usual, sharp as ever, Mark Shapiro, on his latest forum blog, comments, criticisms, corrections, etc. I have one correction there. If Mark is listening, you mentioned that Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, on the son that died young, he mentions he was a Talmud in Yeshivas Yisrael Chanan, So you say that he said he's a Talmud in YU. No, that's the term they used then. In the early 20s, you didn't study in YU. YU didn't exist. So therefore, on his tombstone, it says, Talmid b'yeshivat Reb Yitzchak Elchanan, which is the correct way to refer to it. And I have here two copies of a very interesting essay. I may be a master's, maybe they're working on a doctorate. Interesting. It's on Rabbi, it's on the Sfat Emet and how the Sfat Emet was published. And this is part of only a series that they're going to be working on. And anyone who's interested in Hasidus and the Sfat Emet, very, very interesting. I learned from this things I suspected and how it worked out. It's in English with voluminous footnotes. If anyone is interested in this, an article from the New York Times that Israel recreates wine that Jesus and King David drank. And this is also a very interesting article.
Just a clever way of saying it.
And the New York Times. And I have to tell you that I still throw out my innovation. I spoke about it with the Constantines over Shabbos, and Cheryl, his wife, who used to sit in my classes when she was here 20 years ago, they were very reacted very favorably to my innovation. R.A., S.A. The rabbi is a rabbinic advisor. The female scholar in Torah and Yirat Shemayim is a spiritual advisor. That way you can't confuse the two. And each one plays a different role in the synagogue. If anyone across the world, I got a tremendous pile of emails waiting for me today, so I don't know when I can get to it. My whole day was cast into turmoil when I couldn't stop the car. So I'm interested in hearing reaction, and I'm interested in hearing reaction to the Rakefet proposed ban on rabbis consulting women on a one-to-one basis, be it gerut, be it marital problems, be it divorce, etc. We cannot trust rabbis. The percentage is too high today. It's no longer a miyut she'enu nikar. It's a miyut she'nikar. It's part of modern life. We are all succumbing to the pressures of living in dual world. And that would solve the problem. What do we do with these learned women? I think it's good. I think it's a triple play. But Be'ezrat Hashem, Rakefet is a dummy. So let's see what intelligent people have to say. Yes,
it isn't only a matter of question, can you trust them? There is another Rabbi Levitz that we both knew.
Right.
So he was teaching here at the Comel, pastoral psychology.
Right.
Most yeshivas don't teach pastoral psychology.
Right.
And so therefore the most important tool that a rabbi has when a couple comes or anyone comes is referral, because they should not do psychology and counseling. They're not capable.
Okay.
It's not an easy thing to do, and you have to have not only sympathy, you have to have empathy, and you have to know techniques. And most rabbis don't have it. They may know a lot of things in other areas, but they don't know this. So it's very nice not to push them away. But referral is an exceptionally important tool.
Okay, but what if you have a woman who has the degrees and has had the training? You can refer her to the spiritual advisor. You follow me? In other words, I imagine that women who are going to go for this degree, you're going to have a broad course that will include training for psychological, social, etc., etc. It's not a simple matter. By the way, I found this pen in the room. Does it belong to anybody? Here they clean up, they throw everything out. I found the pen. I guess a pen is pachat nishavet truva today.
You can use a Parker refill.
Okay, until we meet, first of all, chagurim sameach, afreilich and Chanukah, and until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya. Ah, looking to you. Okay, great.